Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. I hope you're all doing great out there tonight, and just wanted to check in and see if anybody wanted to talk. Not sure how long this will go on today, but if you're out there listening and you've got something you'd like to say, area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line in the United States, you can call 855-346-3351. Area code 855-346-3351. And so, let's see, it's Friday, and what are any of the things that have happened today? I think I've annoyed some people about my insistence on having I just lost my studio screen there. Huh. Hi, NSA or whoever. So I annoyed some people today because I'm insisting that people not sell out to Murphy and Barber, and I'm this H.R. 3717 bill that is out there, and as well as the H.R. 4574, which is the Barber bill. So 3717 is Tim Murphy's bill, and 4574 is Barber's bill. And now it's my understanding, because of the MHA article from Mental Health America, that Barber and Murphy are working together in backroom deals, and will be Murphy's team will be putting together the new guidelines for freedom over the 4th of July recess about what the new proposed bill will be. And, you know, the idea that it is going to be about early intervention and screenings and prevention and going after children and young people and young adults and veterans, it should be of concern to everybody. It should just be of concern to everybody. And so there are so many problems that are occurring, and I'd really like to talk with somebody about them, but I'm not going to talk about them out loud for much longer, outside of, to let people know that some people are upset about the fact that I am talking about it and that I'm not stopping talking about it, and that there's so much more that needs to be done in terms of what's available for people and what it is we're supporting. But when the, you know, in quotes, leadership of people who are, you know, identifying as, you know, users of psychiatry, just have, that we're supposed to somehow have tolerance for, or acceptance of what it is they are doing, at the same time, you know, they respect our opinion, but they don't put it forward at all. And so other people talk about this, and this has been going on since the 19th century. Since the 19th century, there have been problems between the, you know, identified reformers and the abolitionists, and I am not a reformer, and I feel terrible because on a personal level, I have nothing against anybody on a personal level, and for those who were, the only reason I have anything to even say is because some of these people are not speaking from their personal experience or opinion in terms of what it is that they're doing. They're speaking from positions of power, and positions of power saying that, you know, people with, you know, quote-unquote mental illness need, you know, high-needs people need high-needs things, and that we should be having a system that's responding to that. And I just feel like we need to get back to our roots of this human rights movement that said that psychiatry was a fraud and that what they did to us was torture, and that what that we're experiencing are crimes against humanity. And what would happen if every single person in a quote-unquote peer role tomorrow said, enough, no more? If all of us together came in and said that these human rights violations must end, and that you must stop, and what would happen? What would happen is that we find out through the news that they're organizing amongst themselves and we're not included. So this idea of going to any of these people in power in the first place just comes back full circle as part of the problem. And that anybody who challenges or questions or, you know, that we need to agree to disagree. And on personal levels, you know, obviously I don't want to have any kind of personal dispute with anybody in this movement. We've all survived whatever it is we've survived. But on intellectual levels or of systems of how it is that this thing operates and what it is it does, and that this is a machine that just rolls over people, and that when you are somebody who has a quote-unquote lived experience and are representing that perspective, to say that it is any of it is okay is allowing them to roll over it with you know, quote-unquote consumer satisfaction and perspective gained. And this is why Clifford Beers in the 1930s said that it was okay that they could sterilize us, because he wanted to at least try to do whatever he could do. And don't forget, all of you people who are in these positions, is that Clifford Beers wound up getting diagnosed as psychotic by the psychiatrist who was running the thing, Adolf Meyer, the National Committee on Mental Hygiene, and locked up in an institution where he died. And so this happens, and this happens all the time, and we're just back in it again, and it's that hot right now. Area code 914, your line is open.
Hi, Lauren, it's Emily.
Hi, Emily.
I just wanted to call in and tell you I can understand your frustration with the Murphy Bill. I've been following the Murphy Bill for months now, and I've been speaking out against it. I called up Representative Murphy's office twice within the last 2 days, and I did identify myself as being with the organization NAMI. I understand people's position on NAMI. I have a completely different position on NAMI and why I am involved with the organization. So I told them that I was not calling on behalf of NAMI. I was with them, but I was not calling on behalf of them. And I got their attention. So they took down my information, and they said they would call me back. I followed up today again, and, of course, they didn't call me back. In any case, you're aware of the fact that I'm the co-organizer of the Mental Health Civil Rights, and I feel like after reaching out to people and hearing what they have to say about, you know, the different aspects of the anti-psychiatry movement, and I'll use that word movement, and that everyone, I don't want to say needs, but should come to realize that we can't go from a system where we have forced treatment to a system that doesn't have forced treatment. It's just not realistic. I wish that we could, but we can't.
We could, and there are plenty of places that do. For example, there is not one peer-run program in New York State which utilizes force. They don't utilize restraints. They don't utilize seclusion. They don't utilize psychiatric drugs. They don't use any of it. It's a culture change that's required, and the idea that psychiatry has an answer is part of the fraud that's being perpetrated on people. I want to keep stay on, Emily, because this is right. This is good. Area code 202. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Yvonne Lawrence. I just want to say we can't go to a system like that. That there's no forced treatment because there are people that have been hurt. I was just at our state hospital on Wednesday at the invitation of my peers, and they had something called the Respect Award, but I always talk to my peers during their ceremony, and there's, I'm just going to give you an example. There's one woman and many of these 250 people that I know very well, and they are, many of these people are political prisoners. This woman, which I've known her story, I don't doubt it's true. She's very smart. She has a master's degree in urban engineering, a mathematics degree. She's been there since she was 26 years old. I don't know how old she is, but she's probably at least over 45. And she tells a story that makes me cringe about the Murphy Bill. She says her husband had her committed. She's one of the individuals who doesn't want to take the chemicals. She always protested. I know this because I go to their government meetings that they have a couple of times a month. And like I said, this person, I've known this person for over 10, 12 years. And they're just stuck there. There are many people that's just stuck there. Other stories, some people are just stuck. They need support in getting out of the hospital, and they need help in withdrawing from the chemicals. I mean, I could tell you, point out other people where they just take, sometimes more is less. But the system and the doctor, they won't relent. They don't want the people to take less. When some people like myself, I would consider myself to talk rationally about people being on the least therapeutic dose. They don't want that. They have them hyped up to the hilt. So, yes, we should be able to go from a system of where there's forced treatment to there's no forced treatment.
And
you would have to give
agree.
A lot of support to these people. But, you know, we have people that are really, when Lauren talks about, I know she says this quite often, some people don't understand that there are people that are being tortured. They are taking these chemicals and stuff because they have to. They don't want to take them. They know it's dangerous to them because I see people that I see and I look at them and I look at the way they look 3 years ago, 5 years, or 10 years ago. They're aging them. They shake.
And can I just say something?
Yes.
I firmly believe that we should be able to go from forced treatment to no forced treatment, but there has to be an in-between, and that we have to get our foot in the door first. We can't.
Well, you know,
I think Emily, I mean, from looking at doing this for 20 years, the in-between has passed already. We were almost at the point of where we had this stuff at bay. Right before 99, it was almost at bay. And the laws that they're making these laws off of that have been going on since 99 in New York, the Kendra's Law, which the all the involuntary outpatient commitment bills, that was proven by 99, that was proven to be not effective. It was wiped out. And then all of a sudden, a big media and government, orgy occurred. And
that's the key, Lauren. That is the key, is that now you're dealing with the current state of affairs with the media, with gun control, and all these other agendas. And
right,
you're not dealing with what you were in 99.
But the whole point is that this isn't like something that we've already missed the step, the place of where it was supposed to it's increasing. So every time that there's a law like this of where they're going to increase the level of force, it brings it further away from trying to eliminate the force, because they're just adding more and more force into the situation. And the other side is that for part of my real frustration with this is that people are going along with, like, switching back to using mental illness language, which is so damaging and so counterproductive to the work of the last 30 years. And they're going along with it because they're afraid that their funding is going to be cut if they don't, because that's what Murphy wants to see. And so they're further validating what Murphy is trying to do, and there is no validation to a quote-unquote mental illness model. It's a fraud.
Can I ask you a question? If I were to go, just hear me out. If I were to go and try to talk to Murphy about no force treatment and use the terms psychiatric torture and I'm not sure, but we'll go with psychiatric torture. How do you think he would respond to me?
I'm sorry?
What was that?
I'm having a little trouble hearing you because there's maybe are you on a speakerphone or a computer background noise? I'm getting a little bit of an echo.
I have a TV running in the background. I said if I were to go to Congressman Tim Murphy and I were to talk to him about doing away with forced treatment and I were to use the term psychiatric torture, how do you think he would respond?
Well, what you would say is that the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Convention Against Torture in 2008 ruled several of psychiatry's practices that may constitute torture ill treatment, including electroshock, restraint, seclusion, drugging, and aversive behavioral interventions, and that in 2013, the Special Rapporteur on the Convention Against Torture, which the United States is party to, said that these things do constitute torture or ill treatment. And so it's not just a bunch of people. That the United Nations international law says that this is a violation of the Convention Against Torture. If we were doing these things to somebody who is an alleged terrorist, people would have to suffer the consequences of having violated human rights law.
So, and they're going to turn around and they're going to say that is international law.
Okay. I want to pipe in here a little bit because I hear both sides of this, what's happening. I understand about the use of the language. I think it's a waste of time trying to talk to Tim Murphy in the first place.
Here.
Because he's being motivated by other things other than that. So you're not going to be able to convince him. I hear what you're saying about using the language or whatever else, and I recognize that we are doing damage is being done to people. And Lauren is right. People have found themselves in a mix. People are getting hundreds of thousands. Some people, not many people, a few people, millions of dollars. And what happened is all the many of the funds they got has been wrapped up in mental illness. Well, they said, yeah, you say there's no such thing as mental illness, and you don't need to get funding for this and that. But I think it's a waste of time to talk to Murphy. To stop Murphy itself, it's probably better to talk to other people, you know, and explain to them that these things are damaging people. Why? Because I said this a couple of nights ago. I said, you people repeat things over and over again, and if you repeat it long enough, even though the science isn't there about brain illness, the information is there about trauma, people still don't respond because they have so much money is involved. I don't know if you heard the speaker that Lauren had last night, but that's what it is. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
True.
And that's why they don't respond.
And if you have, and the one thing Lauren did say is if you have all the people that have been affected by psychiatric torture, including myself, I want to say that I was actually forced illegally and tortured for 3 weeks constantly and illegally brought to court. And I want to make that clear that I was. If you have them come together and get on top of the lawmakers constantly, things will change.
Emily, that's exactly what just happened. And everybody went and they said, oh, well, let's go get these other people. And then these other people don't even, the lawmakers don't even have the right of mind to contact these people to say, hey, by the way, we're making some deals here that maybe you should know about before they hit the press. Not even given information that they were going through. And so the lawmakers... The whole point is that even if every peer worker in the United States tomorrow said that they were going to say no against all of this, that it still wouldn't have the power to shut down what these people are doing.
I disagree, because if you look at the Free Justina campaign, they actually shut down.
That wasn't the peer workers.
It wasn't the peer workers, but it was everyone.
That was the public.
And if you look at our site right now, our mental health civil rights protest, we are actually getting the public involved. Public people are actually coming on and getting involved. Not just people who have suffered from psychiatric torture, we are actually getting the public involved.
And I have no objection to what you've been doing. I don't think that you're part of the problem.
I know.
But the reality is that Murphy's office is working on an agenda that Murphy himself probably has really little to do with. And that the people who on Barber, for example, and I feel terrible that this happened to him, but he got shot in the Gabby Giffords shootings. He is no friend to us. And so his whole thing is, if this guy had been in for psychiatric involvement, then he and Gabby Giffords and all those other people wouldn't have been shot. So he's no friend to us. Do you know what I mean? At a base level, he has no objection to forced treatment. He's pro early identification and screening and assessment and treatment, plus what they're doing to the veterans. I mean, the way that I was looking closer at the Murphy bill and the veterans courts that they're going to be setting up out of this.
Let me ask you a question to help you.
Go ahead, Yvonne. But yeah, veterans courts, folks, like mental health court or drug court. They're going to be better in court.
I think it's a good thing that we involve other people and, you know, that other people see this as something that can happen to them, because that's the good point. I think what some people are saying is that just like we don't want people to use the illness language, that sometimes some of the other views, which when you get in the room and negotiate, and we're not anywhere in the room. That's the point. We're not anywhere in the room negotiating, because usually when these things happen, we're not there. The people that go and talk to the people, they're not there. There are other people there behind. That's why I don't believe in that negotiating up front, we should put on a strong front. But I do understand that there are people that they paint everybody as being very far. And there are people that are bad. There are some people, I don't know if Lauren, you agree, there are some people that are just bad news. They are not, they may not have a mental illness. They may not, because it doesn't exist. They are certainly in emotional distress, but they may not be, and I know you're going to disagree with me, they may not be fit to walk among us. There are some people that are just animals. I mean,
that's where I get to disagree.
I don't know what to say. Do we give them treatment? Do we lock them up in jail? What do we do with them?
I think there's a whole slew of things around that, but I think that part of You know, part of what I know is that when people are treated like they're less than human, it gives them every reason to act like they're less than human. And so I think that part of what we need to do, and I'm not saying it's an easy fix. I'm saying this is a monstrous culture social change that we're after. But you're not going to be able to predict who those people are. You're not going to be, and that's the problem. And past violence doesn't indicate future violence. And not having been violent in the past doesn't indicate that you won't be violent in the future. And so I think that this is a terribly slippery slope, and I'm loving this conversation.
And it's complicated.
And it is complicated. Area code 330, your line is open.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on live. Who is this?
It's David.
Hi, David. What do you want to talk about?
I just think that it's kind of, I heard from a psychiatric nurse that they were building forensic jails like 10 or 15 years ago. So they're, you know, the hype seems to go along with, you know, whatever their agenda is. So, and I, you know, I'm not privy to that, but with me, for instance, that the people will directly lie to the authorities and try to get me in trouble and stuff like that. It's like a quota system of beds that have to be filled. That's what it looks like.
Oh,
and, you know, they're losing money if they're not filling beds.
And that is true. I have seen that where, and I've literally seen that where they have a board in their admissions, and they have to have a certain amount of beds filled, and that is disgusting.
They'll tell you that straight
up. There's nothing to say. There's nothing else to say except for that is disgusting. That there's a quota for beds.
In the jails, admittedly, it's for profit. So, you know, it's not, they have to fill, you know, it's not even about justice. It's about, you know, about money. Or, you know, they have to fill the beds to make the money so they can make salaries.
That's true in the psychiatric field, too. But what's the correct strategy? We can talk all day about, you know, one side can say it's torture, another side can say it's overreaching and we're, you know, committing people and giving them forced treatment in the community that doesn't need it. But the thing that I always think about is, what is a good strategy? And there maybe had to be a multi-pronged strategy. We need to involve people who don't understand this as torture, as well as the people who know this very well, very intimate with the fact that this damages people. But many people don't, because they tell them over and over this is good for the people. The people don't realize they have an illness, and you know, we want to save those people's lives because they don't see that some of the interventions are causing people not to be able to work, not to be able to have relationships. They're causing them to be irritable and prevent crimes. I like to, you know, say, you know, what is the correct strategy? I mean, Lauren always points out, and some other people, that, you know, we really should be going to the UN. But how do we affect? We talk about calling the state legislators in New York to stop the expansion of Kendra's law.
I'll tell you partially what I really believe. What I really believe is that if all of these people in power would stop telling us to stop using this language because nobody likes it and started using it themselves, that we would be in a different place. But instead of them insisting that the language of the movement, of this movement that started in the 1960s and that some of us are trying to keep preserved, is not credible, then they just start to use the language of the oppressors, and the oppressors aren't interested in what we have to say or think. They have a profit-driven agenda. And this idea, David, of quotas, that's just one great example of how they have a clear agenda on what it is they're doing here.
Well, I heard the lady asked a question. I had to go to the police department. You know, I wrote a letter to the chief. I talked to a captain, and he said it's high-pressure social groups. It's not necessarily the police, but when you've got high-pressure social groups acting on, you know, whatever, you know, their hierarchy wants done, so to speak, then, you know, that seems to present a problem. But I had to go to the police, And I wrote a letter. I talked to the guy, the captain. He says high pressure social groups. So they're aware of the problem. As you know, as long as they're not part of the high pressure social groups that want these, you know, want people incarcerated for whatever reason. And a lot of it, I could imagine, is just people make up things in their own mind about somebody, and then they want them to hold them responsible for, you know, whatever they're thinking about them, and that's criminal. Now, these other things where people are shooting people and murdering people and doing all these horrendous crimes, that needs to be dealt with. But these innocent people being hoarded, hoarded into these places, or is diabolical in my mind. So it's
the mental health system altogether. If you can't, I'm not saying that private providers are any better, but if you have to do that, the public mental health system is a place that categorizes people that I would just stay away from, as far away as you can, from this, because this is how people get categorized. Not only that, sometimes people are economic dependent. A lot of people don't want to give up their Social Security disability. They have housing vouchers and other things. So there are other ways that people are coerced into psychiatry, not just by the fact that they're forced to take treatment. If someone has been 15, 16 years, hasn't worked anywhere, doesn't have any skills, no one has helped work on anything, they are locked in, especially if they're older. If you're between 45 and like 55 years old or whatever else, it's a kind of coercion as well.
Right, and I mean, like I was, mentioning before, and they're going after everybody, and they're going in for all groups. So the women, they're getting through, now maternal depression screenings. Under this Murphy bill, the Veterans Treatment Court program is something that gets added, and this is identified as the term Veterans Treatment Court program means a court program involving collaboration among criminal justice, veterans, and mental health and substance abuse agencies that provide qualified veterans with intensive judicial supervision and case management, which may include random and frequent drug testing when appropriate, a full continuum of treatment services, including mental health services, substance abuse services, medical services, and service to address trauma, so on and so forth. And so this is on page 57 in the Murphy Bill. This is so wide-reaching. This is going after so many people, creating all of these new streams of funding into these various agencies, state-sponsored torture. Emily, are you still there?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm listening. And as I'm listening, you're asking what do we do, but nobody wants to hear how we truly approach this, because it's not that we just and Lauren, you just hit part of it. They're overreaching. They're going towards women. So again, unfortunately it comes down to the terminology, because As we are in the mental health civil rights protests, reaching out to everyone, not just people who have been, tortured or abused by the system, we're reaching out to everyone. So we need to use just general language so that people understand.
But the language that the movement, the initial movement that started this and that got attention, that caused all of these peer-run programs to have their funding and all of that, that movement that people have abandoned the language for, because that's why they got the money, because they were bought out, so they were looking for people who would compromise on the language. But what we need to do is get the language to be common to the public so that they are also using this language. And, I spent the last 5 years putting together research that meticulously used language and explanations of why we need to use language like slavery and torture and murder. What Sue reminds me all the time really is genocide is what I'm really talking about, and I wish I had included that in the dissertation, and get it through on academic levels and get it through with the idea that when people use this language, they are silenced and retaliated against by the state, and that this is a problem that needs to be addressed and stopped, and get it through all of that to have, you know, in the time that I was working on that, people now directly going back and using language like mental illness, which we had all but, like, wiped out of the vernacular of state kinds of places. And so the quick cave to allow terms like mental illness back in allows back in things like psychiatry has any legitimacy. And so,
Let me ask you a question. Would you rather let Tim Murphy's bill go completely through, or would you rather, okay, and hear me out, or would you rather be able to stop the forced treatment and use language that you disagree with?
I don't think there is any stopping the forced treatment. I don't think anybody's talking
there
about stopping.
There absolutely is, because you have rights by the U.S. Constitution. There absolutely is. You have rights that are afforded to you by the U.S. Constitution. And my experience, even just independently, exercising those rights has been very successful. And that's with the Department of Justice and just going to my own personal representative. And that's just independently. I think that a lot of this is just people not having the knowledge of, and this is the fault of the system, of not having the knowledge of where to go and how to go about it, and the system fighting back and not wanting people to know this.
We should be fighting the Murphy Bill's provisions on forced treatment, but the facts are that in almost every state there is some form of civil commitment in hospitals. There are only 5 states that don't have some kind of outpatient treatment. And what happens is when people get one foothold, it just snowballs. And that's the reason why the Murphy is so important. That's why it's probably, even though some people may disagree, even I may feel as though I may not use that strong a language, may disagree with it, but when the deal is made, and Lauren is talking about, the most powerful people in Washington sometimes are not necessarily the congresspeople and citizens, is their staff. And even though we might have people that say they represent us going to talk to their senators, their congressmen, but when the deal is cut, because when there are multiple bills and they have conference, we are not in the room. So we have to put our most forceful face forward to say that we don't have it. At the same time, we do need people to be explaining to people that why this is torture, why this is bad, why it's hurting people, because there are people, some of their peers will say, I don't understand it. They'll say if it wasn't for forced treatment, they would be dead. And even if their voice is very quiet, very low-key, people will listen to people like that when they say that, because they haven't yet had experience. If you've just been taking chemicals for maybe a year or two and you're not 15, 20, 30 years into using the chemicals where you're losing kidney function or whatever else, you may not see that. You haven't gotten a good night's sleep and, 35 years and all of a sudden you got a good night's sleep. But we have to inform the public, and maybe we need to do a little more better job of describing why it's bad, why it's torturous, that this is going to affect everybody. And I do think that by all means necessary, we need to defeat this outpatient treatment, the doing away with the TNA. And that's why I listen and I call into this program, because at least on this program we do explore. We do talk about the action steps that we can take, and that's why I always throw out the question, well, what can we do if we don't use that language? And I don't want to use, I'm not to use the mental illness language. How do we convince people that this is dangerous if we don't say that this is bogus.
Right, and I'm just wondering, and Yvonne, I think you made a lot of really important points, and the power that a statement that goes against what it is they wanted to go against wins a lot of influence in the larger political spheres, and that's part of the problem. But I'm just wondering, Emily and others, are you aware of Tina Minkowitz's work?
I am aware of it, yes.
Okay, and so there's an article. Tina is a phenomenal lawyer and has done a ton of work around international human rights law, and is with the Center for Users and Survivors, Center for Human Rights for Users and Survivors of Psychiatry, CRUSP, of which I'm on the board of directors. I guess I should just make that clear that I'm talking about this. But there, she has an article on Mad in America. About that we name it torture, and you know, somewhere down in the article she writes, forced psychiatry is torture because it meets the criteria for the definition of torture in Article 1 of the United Nations Convention Against Torture. That is, it is an act that intentionally inflicts severe mental or physical pain or suffering by or with the acquiescence of state officials for purposes such as interrogation, coercion, or intimidation, punishment, or for any reason based on discrimination of any kind. And, you know, and I think that it's really important to understand that, you know, severe mental or physical pain or suffering, which I know you were subject to, and I'm not saying, you know, and I have this argument with people all the time. Well, if you use this word, you're going to turn off the people in power right away, and then they're not going to listen to you. But as long as we're not using this word, they continually see that what they're doing is beneficial or benevolent to people.
Because
we're not calling it. We're not naming it what it is.
I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree, because I think that you can use other words and still get your point across.
But not use mental illness, right? I agree with that. That you can use other. I can use other words like that are not mental illness, but describe what happens to people. What's happening to people?
Yeah.
You know that people are dying. People are losing their sexual function. They're losing the productive years of their life. They are having irreparable problems to occur to them, like A, Y, and Z. And is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. There are mm-hmm. other ways to explain what is going on other than having to use the word mentally ill or any of the lingo in the mental health system.
Are you saying that people shut down when you start using that language? Is that what you're trying to allude to?
Who? I'm not sure.
So people don't shut down when you use the word torture, is what you're saying, right?
No, if you go to a lawmaker and you mm-hmm. start using psychiatric torture and stuff like that, I think that that's going to be seen as the extreme,
yeah.
And they're going to turn off. If you go to them and you describe what happens in the mental health, what happens in psychiatric hospitals, and you tell them, listen, I guess you're going to have to use the word torture. It's true. I guess maybe
you just
you're
gonna
were going
to say I
word.
Was tortured, right?
Yeah. I guess
so
you're going
you
to
you have to.
I guess I started at the beginning. With that. See, this is what I'm talking about.
I guess eventually you're going to have to say, you're right. I guess eventually you're going to have to, I guess not right away, but I guess eventually you're going to have to say, you know what, I was tortured.
I have to educate them and maybe have them eventually use the word. It's like another group of people got upset with me earlier in the year when I tried to say that we're going to a 1930s German with concentration camp. And some of my other peers who had ancestors that were actually in concentration camps. I have relatives who liberated concentration camps. But they felt offended by that I would put that in the same space. And I think that there's room for both when we, as a strategy. That's why I love Lauren's show. I think it has potential that we could come and see this. And that when at one time I would go for another group and we would testify between the Ways and Means Committee. And we'd actually make up notebooks. So this discussion that we just had, there's a way in which you educate people. And actually, they will come out of their mouth and they will use the words when you describe what happened to them. And that's what we want to have happen. But we shouldn't shut down the people who have been striving all along, been out front saying, this is torture. We just need to be able to come together because there is no way you can't get in bed with the devil. I mean, some people think that if they minimize the language, that they're going to still keep their little dollars and stuff they have. And sometimes it's not little dollars because they've got payrolls of large amounts of people. But I can see this coming because I think what happens where I live in D.C., and we usually, on health and stuff, we're usually ahead. And what they're doing is the intent is really to shut down peer services. And so if people that are involved in giving peer support, if they don't come over to the other side, they're going to wake up very shortly in another year or so, and they said, I don't know what happened, you know, why we're out here. Because parts of the Murphy Bill actually say that they want something to be a medical model. Some of the things that some of the peer groups do, they're very effective. It wouldn't be counted as that. So people need to move over to this side. Like the conversation we're having, we need to be, some people won't even pick up the telephone. There are people that don't even want to talk to me and won't probably talk to Lauren either. We need to have this conversation because they've got to look beyond this physical period.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, and I think that this is partially why, you know, there are, you know, sometimes, especially like in you know, that where you have to provoke the situation, where you have to jostle people's awareness. Like, consciousness raising wasn't always like all, you know, flowers and love and hugs. You know, that this is a civil rights movement, that this is, you know, to be able to claim and make claim to what it is that is happening to us, to be able to name it as we want to name it, and as we experience it, and to have people in power have to listen to that, you know, even if it's uncomfortable and startling for them. And, you know, I agree, Emily, when I start to talk to somebody, I don't start screaming the first second psychiatric torture. If I'm in one of these long ongoing conversations with somebody who knows me, yes, I'll say that without saying anything else first. And sometimes for people who may not know that there's like a 20-year history of back and forth between people, sometimes maybe they go, well, where did this come from, right? So I can but when you're talking to legislators, sure, you're not going to, but you are going to explain to them how this happens and that it's not just people saying it, it's that under international law and under the Convention Against Torture, which the United States is party to, this is a violation of it. And in the international law, it names commissioners, legal people, state representatives, legislators, all responsible for eliminating force from psychiatric practices. And there are like guide steps in developing standards of non-forced psychiatry. But even with all that, it still doesn't get to the issue that psychiatry itself is a fraud. right? So there's the idea that they're torturing people, but then there's the idea that psychiatry is just a fraud, and sometimes that's even more difficult to have a conversation about than the idea that it's torture. And I'm not sure how to get the general public.
They can admit to that. I'm sorry that I wish that I wish you lived in Washington, but it's sometimes in some places it's hard for people to do stuff like this if they're by themselves or they're a small group. But it is possible. I've been to a conference where I challenged each one of the persons and no one took me out, and almost each one of the speakers, including Kate Jamison and some other people, they sort of admitted that. Up front, in front of, over 1,000 people. They sort of, admit to the fact that, these brain scans and don't be taking the brain scans to the court and stuff like this.
They admit it.
But getting the public
to believe it.
Huh?
They admit it, and then they continue as if they didn't just admit it, but the big issue is how do you get the public to believe it, because according to at least half of 50%, 49% of Americans think that there's a biological basis to a quote-unquote mental illness. So where are they getting this information from? They're getting this information from the pharmaceutical companies and the government. And so,
I have ideas about how you do that. Number one, I wish that, what's the name of that program? Saturday Night Live, and what's the other one with the guy that comes out with the flag? The Daily Show and those guys. I wish that we could get them to do spoofs, for example, about the TV commercials and stuff like that. I mean, I just think that they're right for fodder. I don't know why. I guess it's because maybe they advertise on the show. But, sometimes that's the way to poke fun at something. I know that people like Jim Gotson have had some lawsuits. I mean, it has to be all out front. I remember when I was a kid, and I'm old enough to remember when there were, unfortunately, some shows that were taken off of TV because people complained about them projecting negative images of African Americans. I mean, we can't just look at legislators. We have to look at the image. We have to look at the media. We have to investigate, just like some people that seem to be writing their own scripts when they come on these TV programs, and that's what they're doing. They come on the TV programs. They provide the background and the questions because they are considered to be the experts, so they don't have a view. We don't have what do you call it, the Republican and the Democrat version of us. They go to these same people. They appear. If they have one of us on the TV or radio, in fact, we're not even there. But they don't speak strongly. They don't have a Lauren Tenney or someone like that on there. I don't know if anyone, I've seen some people like Dan Fisher in different forms, and they don't speak, very strongly against the thing. So we have to do a better job of informing the media, I believe.
But the problem is that the media is controlled by very powerful people. So we can inform. It doesn't matter because the media is controlled by very powerful people.
Well, Joe McCarthy... And I was probably not even born or a little kid then, that time, but people can go back and look at the history of where there was a witch hunt for supposedly communists in the government and look at other ways in which these false truths, whether it's about communism, whether it's about integration, what tools did other movements use to help put these things down. Now, I think someone said something about suppose that all patients just refused to show up for their treatment. What would happen?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Suppose people refuse to use the mental health system.
That's true.
They would just send the police out. I mean, and then that's, I guess, where, again, like what Dr. Bonnie Burstow was talking about last night, is the two different kinds of state power. You know, you have the king power and then the police power, and that when you mush them together is kind of where we're at here with this idea of benevolence and that it's for our own good, and yet, you know, at the same time, public safety and, you know, public threat. And so they come after us, and they would continue to come after us. But I think that there should be a call for people to, but in my mind, it's not even so much about what individuals do or don't do as much as what the actual system is set up to allow itself to present itself as. The way the system is allowed to present itself is the problem to me. Whether or not individuals choose to use that or buy into it or,
Lauren, what are you saying? The big little play. How is the system presenting itself?
As if it has some kind of answer, as if it's science, as if it as if it's beneficial to people, as if it with fraud, it blatantly lies about what it can and can't do. You know, the idea, even like the Murphy Bill, even like the idea that the Murphy Bill is going to stop some random act of violence is ludicrous. There is no law that can stop some random act of violence. It's just not possible.
Well, that's a talking point when you're on CNN, but the others, and we agree on that, and I think most of the audience probably agrees on that. But how do they present themselves as if they somehow have not just answers to the false idea that we can prevent, you know, some of these little mass killings, but that they are helpful to people, you know, because there are people that, what would you say is, someone would say, well, you know, before I got my diagnosis, you know, I work for such and such company, and now I'm on disability. I mean, it's the whole Robin Whittaker thing, you know, and for the last 10, 15 years, I've been collecting a check below poverty wages for my city, for where I live or whatever else. So that's what I'm talking about, the false hope, because they promote this idea that if you get help, that you'll be able to live. And I'm not saying that. I know people, when I go to these support groups that the anonymous groups have, some people that are there, they will say, well, you know, if it wasn't for this, I would be that way. But for the vast majority of the people who are caught up in this net, this I call it the net of psychiatry, that's not true. And that's why I was trying to pull out of you is how they're saying that they're helpful. Because what they're saying is, put people who say, Yvonne, who do you want these people to be, homeless on the street?
You know, and I'm sorry, psychiatry, if somebody does not have a home, psychiatry does not have an answer for that. That is an economic issue. That is not a quasi-social constructed medical issue.
You don't have housing for people? They don't have, for all these people that, these 80% of the people that are homeless, that if they came into treatment, that they would suddenly have homes?
It's literally create a segregated housing system for people who have psychiatric histories, where you have to then comply with psychiatric treatment in order to be able to have a place to sleep at night. It is criminal. It is absolutely criminal. Yes.
I remember. I think it was a couple, maybe a week ago. I remember you saying something. And when it comes to a solution, I look at it this way. You were talking about racketeering and fraud and all of this other stuff, right? So
yeah.
What I think part of the answer is, and what needs to be done, is investigations. The state has, and the DOJ has, investigators to investigate these types of issues. And complaints that if you know of something, you put those complaints in and they have to be investigated. So I think that's
You may have been just coming in this new exchangeover of the new Justice Center, which just opened up last year.
No, not the Justice Center. No, I'm talking about the that's a fraud. That is just completely corrupt. I'm talking about the Department of Justice.
Okay.
Governor Cuomo. His office is the most corrupt office I've ever.
I hope
he is listening right now. I really hope he is listening, because his office is the most corrupt office I've ever seen in my entire life as a governor. I really hope he or his staff is listening, because my case was shifted from office to office to office. I mean, the most corrupt office. And I hope one of his staff is listening, or he is listening.
Well, that's the whole point of the campaign that people have. That's why they want to shut down PNAs. That's why they want to overlord to Samson. And I know some people have problems with Samson, but that's what they want, because historically, the federal government has been the protector of people who are being taken advantage of, whether it's minorities, whether it's other groups that have been disenfranchised or have been dealt an uneven hand. And that's the larger issue for the Murphy bill, and that's why you got to pay attention to any of these other little bill that might get spawned off into amendments for other bills, because that's what they really want to do, is they want to kill the role that the federal government has had. A lot of people don't realize that there have been, for example, it's not strong enough, but in the last 5 or 6 years, there have been voluntary settlements with a lot of the chemical companies, and some of the billions of dollars. Probably not enough, because it was a voluntary settlement. That just tells you how much money they're making if they can, you know, take a voluntary settlement. These monies don't go to the individuals that have been hurt. You know, they go back to the states. But that's part of what all of this is about.
Emily, I'm just, because I think it is, it's all, I mean, and the follow the money, right? This is where we're at. But the Justice Department, you were saying...
Oh, for the department on a federal level?
Yeah,
they have, they look over these types of issues. So if you know of something happening that's, like, involves racketeering or something, if you go onto their site, they have to look into that. That is their job. And you call them up or you write them a tip, they have to look into that.
But the whole thing is racketeering. I mean...
But if you have a specific instance of it, if you know of something, or if you even have a tip, write them. Put in a complaint. As long as it's valid and it's the truth, let them know.
And yes,
that's why with my... Go ahead.
No, Emily, go ahead. That's why what?
That's why with my case, when I what do you call it? I took it so far because I had so much documentation, even with the Westchester County Supreme Court, of all of their corruption, because I had to do my own petition, and I caught the judge. I had it in writing with the judge lying and his own corruption and everything else. The Justice Department couldn't not investigate my complaint. I just had so much information, even with the judge just blatantly just ignoring and lying in his own, response. This is what we need to do. We need to actually get these people caught in their own lies. and blatantly catch them. It's hard. It's not easy. It took me almost a year to do this. A lot of heartache and a lot of stress. But I did not give up. And I know sometimes I come across hard. And, you know, it comes from, you know, a lot of passion and a lot of persistence. And it comes from, you know, caring and stuff like that. And a lot of hard work. You know, sometimes we have to look at other alternatives. And what didn't work in the past, if something didn't work in the past, maybe we have to look at something that's going to work in the present because times change. You know, that's all I'm saying is...
I know that every time the people who start out fighting against something wind up switching over to compromising, it winds up doing us a huge disservice, and we wind up getting set back.
I do not compromise.
I'm not saying you, but it's what's happening. It's what happened this last go around, and it's what's still happening because people are more concerned about the funding for their organizations than they are about the realities of how things are going to play out.
Well, I can tell you this, that our protest is not funded by anyone. We are doing our own fundraising. It is not funded by anyone. We, you know, I just want to make this clear. I don't succumb to anyone. I am my own person and always have been my whole entire life. If I truly believe in a cause, I put my whole heart into it, my whole entire heart and soul into it. And if anyone knows me, you know, you ask them. If Emily believes in something, Emily goes with it 100%. And that's it.
Right, and again, we talk about the mental health civil rights protest almost every night on the show, tell people where to go find it, the Twitter storms and then the hashtag campaigns, and I think that, you know, that you really have a great energy that you're bringing into this mess. And I think that this issue of language is something that's important and that, you know, we need to have these kinds of discussions because it gets to a better way for people to understand how to approach it and how to go about it. But at the end of the day, what we are talking about is people being tortured and needing that torture stops and the civil rights that we have be protected. And that's, you know, and so I think that what you're all doing there is really good. And when you look at the page, all you see is statements like that civil rights violations and discrimination against people who have a psychiatric label must end. Psychiatric abuse violates our constitutional rights and violates our rights under the United Nations. I mean, it's what's all over the page. You know, you're not talking about quote-unquote mental illness and, you know, and all this other stuff. But the people who are paid to represent us are.
I'm fully learning about that. I had no idea that if you worked for the government that you couldn't speak out against them. I had absolutely no idea about that. That actually should be against free speech. That should be against your rights.
Yeah.
If you work for the government, you can't speak out against them because you're getting funding.
Right.
That's ridiculous. That's against your rights.
Right.
It's love.
Right, and that's
they're gonna
pull
your
where
funding?
The problem lays. And so the government's not going to spend money to fight against for people to fight against the government. And so they say, well, we'll compromise here or there or the other place. And before you know it, you have a bunch of people who are, like, talking, you know, privileging language, like, you know, mental illness system language, and, you know, promoting medication and promoting all this stuff. And if people want to take drugs, do whatever drugs you want to do. This isn't about drugs. This is about the structure of it, you know, and how the system is allowed to be able to.
I wouldn't get the people off the hook that easy. What they say is this. You cannot use the money for lobbying activities. So if you get money from SAMHSA, or if you get money from your state, you can't turn around and take that money and use it for lobbying. You can raise money in other ways to educate people. And sometimes people, just like they misuse the HIPAA laws, some people misuse the laws around lobbying. And even if you yourself don't feel comfortable in doing it, a lot of these organizations and groups should be supporting other people. Their CEOs might not feel comfortable, but they should be supporting other people who come out and speak strongly about it. So I don't think that we should be letting them off the hook that much because they're getting money.
Well, I don't think we should be letting them off the hook. I'm just saying it's the same old thing that always screws us up, because then all these people in power say, oh, but look, all these consumers are saying that this is good by them, and we got involvement, and we got a voice, and people express it. And so when the message is, well, we can, you know, we have to agree to disagree, and that the only message that's getting forward is the one that's going to keep us funded.
Some people are saying this. They're saying that, We want less of this, but more of this. I mean, the average person does not get peer services. I don't know why this big deal about it. I mean, they don't get peer services in the Medicaid, which kind of way. There's lots of peer support goes on. There are lots of groups that are doing stuff like my groups. We don't get any of those funds. But, I mean, some of these people have set themselves up saying that they speak for us. Like, I get so upset when I see something on Facebook where our representative or whatever, and I ask, who is our representative? You know, who is representing us? And then I will see something in the paper, and Lauren, you're right, down the line, like about ACA, they'll say, oh, so-and-so family organization was at the White House or such and such. And I will send a Facebook or email. I said, well, why weren't you at this, you know, since you are supposed to be the supposedly recognized whatever, whatever. So, you know, we have to start, even if people don't like the language or whatever else, we have to start speaking and educating people about it, because some people, they, for whatever reason, whether it's money or whether they don't really believe what Lauren, some people just don't believe what we're saying. They don't believe it. They just tolerate it, and then they go up there and they cash the check, and that's all it is to it. They're in a different sphere. Someone who's getting a six-figure salary, even though they're subject to it, and they got, not saying anything about anybody that got their PhD or whatever, got municipal guy on their name, and they can walk away, and they can go somewhere else. It's different than the average person who is oppressed through the mental health system. I don't even consider myself severely oppressed, but the average person.
Right, and that's, I think that it's such an important point, because of people who actually access peer services, it's like 1% of the people who are getting actual, you know, quote unquote psychiatric services in general, and so it's literally a jam to try to keep these things. And I'm not saying there's anything even wrong with peer services. I'm not attacking peer services, so I don't want anybody to confuse that. But but it is. The way that they're putting themselves in positions, just like Clifford Beers did, to be able to say that they've got participation from people, and they've got the go-ahead, and you get a couple of people who are willing to say, you know, well, yeah, I take my medication, and I have a mental illness, and this is what I'm doing, and they're selling the rest of us down the river.
the few workers working for the agency, and all they are is another low-paid peer working for an agency. And I try to separate them, but most of them, not all, most I consider peer support people that who are working for a peer support organization who have values and ethics that respect the people that they're mutually providing services for. And
oh,
when
I
you
believe
work,
that they exist also.
Yeah, but when you're working for an agency, getting Medicaid dollars, they have, you get your peer support training, then you get your overall agency training. Because so people quickly tell me, well, Yvonne, you know, that's why I work for an agency and you don't. Because, you know, those are the rules and, you know, those are the policies of the agency, you know. And I've had people that I've met that tell me, says, well, I'm just interested in getting these people to take these, they don't use the word chemicals, medications as quickly as possible so they can hurry up and get the hell out of here. I said, yeah. And most of them I know, they're very compliant. They've been here for, you know, decades and decades. So, you know, there's a lot of myths going on because there's a lot of money to be made. And, you know, we should be reminding people about ways in which to they can become involved. Everybody is not going to even, you know, so they can, there are all kinds of ways that people can be involved. We should be, whatever little money people have, they should be giving it to the organizations that do this, whether it's Mind Freedom, whether it's Psych Rights, because this kind of work is not cheap. Even if someone is doing it voluntarily, it's not cheap to do it. Even this radio program, Lauren, you have to pay some money for the time on blog radio.
Yep.
Yeah, and so
yep.
People have to support.
And so do the people who are calling in and everything else. I mean, nothing happens without money. But when those who are in positions of power who have the money sell us out over and over again to in the idea of protecting the money becomes poison. The money is not worth the selling out to what it is people then are tuned into, and I think that this is just the bigger part of the problem. But and that nobody's paying attention. Like this, the Murphy bill. I don't know if you've read the whole thing. It's like 130 some odd pages long, and it's so far reaching. And this thing of with veterans and creating courts specifically for veterans, like mental health courts or drug courts. It's a mental health, drug, and criminal court wrapped up into one.
Isn't it scary?
It's really scary. it's really scary.
I say Murphy, when Murphy said on there, I saw the testimony. I could play, and people can go to YouTube and see the testimony that Nancy Jensen. I can't remember his first name. But the MH, Mental Health America guy gave, and...
Sharon.
You should really go and listen to, like, a lot of these things are open to listen to when he says, did you read the bill? And Nancy Jensen said yes, and of course, Murphy had no questions for her.
No. He was so disrespectful. When she tried to speak, he was so disrespectful to her. But I think
who was truly damaged by the mental health system. If people don't know these individuals, they should, because these are survivors of some pretty horrific things. There's no excuse for people
and she
not
has
knowing.
A book, actually. I think it's called The Girl Who Cried Wolf. I'm pretty sure that's what her book is called. Really, and phenomenal work in working to protect protection and advocacy, and the PAMI boards, which also, quite frankly, are useless most of the time. And so, that's part of the problem is that, like, the idea that Murphy has the audacity to call, like, SAMHSA anti-psychiatry or any of these national groups anti-psychiatry, they're the furthest thing from anti-psychiatry.
I think that's what your other person that called in is trying to allude to. What happens is when people use those words, They think of it as a smear, and that's why I was asking this question. There's probably no other word to use. It's just that how do we go about to educate? And there really is no other word to use other than that, but they use it as a smear. You know, it's like, you know, it's like calling someone a communist, you know, in the late 1950s, early 1960s. And people should probably say, well, yes, I am anti-psychiatric, you know, so, but we're away from that.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously that's a huge part of the problem, but the idea that SAMHSA is anti-psychiatry on any level is ludicrous.
It's a joke.
They promote this, and that's the bigger problem. That's the bigger social problem. Emily, like, how do we get the public to disinvest in the messaging from the pharmaceutical industries that they have been and the media that they've been inundated with for their entire lives?
I think that you take it from a standpoint of showing them the evidence of what psychiatry is trying to do to the children, because there is a lot of evidence out there that, for example, with ADHD, a lot of kids are being diagnosed with this ADHD where I honestly don't believe in ADHD. I don't.
Well, neither
that
did the guy who came up with it. And on his deathbed, he said it was all a fraud. And so
that one diagnosis, you know, first of all, when they diagnose it, they diagnose it too early. Because a lot of kids are very hyper when they're very, very young. That's the stage that they're in. And then when they go to school, teachers are not supposed to be diagnosing children. It is against the law. And they're diagnosed in the classroom. And it's based off of teachers' observations. Teachers are not supposed to be.
Organizations got a special program where they teach teachers how to do that.
And they're not supposed to be.
Right.
They are not supposed to be. They are not psychologists. They are not medical professionals.
I agree. Neither are policemen.
So this is the problem. And they're over-drug. And I think this is where we need to educate parents and educate the public. Like, this is what's happening. I don't think a lot of parents who see symptoms in their children and are fed this BS by doctors, oh, well, it's bipolar or it's this or it's that. Know that all these drugs are doing harm and that it's not bipolar or it's not, you know, whatever they're saying it is. That
right.
Your kid is going through a normal stage in life. They're responding to life circumstances. Are there those extreme cases? You know, yes, maybe. But no, an adolescent has hormones.
And trauma, and other oppressions, and other issues, and that it's a fraud. They have not a shred of medical evidence for any of this existing, and yet they've got the states paying trillions of dollars into the system at a great profit, and what we're doing to children. And I think, like, even Justina Pelletier's situation is the epitome of the example. Like, getting actual medical treatment, goes for a second opinion. Psychiatrist says that it's all in her head. Child Protective Services takes child away from parent. Child is locked in a mental institution for 18 months and suffers who knows what.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but what I don't understand is how Justina even was admitted to the psych ward, because she wasn't a danger to herself and she wasn't a danger to anyone else. So under those two conditions, you can only admit someone to a psychiatric ward. So how was she even admitted?
And as a child for treatment, and that what was wrong with her was that it was psychiatric. But I agree with you. I mean, you know what I mean? But even by the standard, But
with intimate that there was.
But with that, children, it becomes an entirely. Yeah, with children, it also becomes an entirely different thing because you don't have the right to consent, and so you're just relying on parental permission. And if and then because they were, it was seen as a neglect case and issues with that, which was all proven to be fraud, and there wasn't any neglect, and the Pelletiers did nothing wrong to their daughter. You know, like, so it's just, it's so horrible. And I just want to mention that Justina Pelletier and her family are going to be on the Mike Huckabee show.
Yes,
on the Fox
tomorrow.
News. Yeah, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And so
but
just...
the radio or TV?
TV on the Fox News channel. And again, like here, the right wing, the far right wing is who gets this. You know, because they don't want the government involved in their lives. And
I want to say something about the ADHD. I'll let you finish about Justina first, though. But I want to say something because in the community where I live in, and I'm an African-American woman living in an African-American community, it's more than likely that African-American boys will be diagnosed with ADHD. And this is something that has gone forward. And I'm not talking about people getting, you know, the standard ADHD medication. People are getting antipsychotics and things like this. We didn't have this 20 or 30 years ago. And I am not a doctor, but this is my belief about it. There is, just as there's a pharmaceutical industry, there's a food industry. And many of the packaged goods that we get, especially in poor urban areas, have a lot of chemicals, salt, sugar, a lot of that product for cereal. If you go down the cereal aisle, sometimes I don't even recognize some of the stuff as cereal. I didn't realize chocolate and cereal went together or colored things. But we have children now who are eating lots of salt, a lot of sugar, a lot of soda pop, lots of things that give people a sugar high, and they hit a wall. We didn't have all these, we didn't have people being diagnosed with ADHD, you know, 30 years ago. And I truly believe it's because of the lack of fresh fruits and vegetables, over-reliance on sugar and salt, not saying, and also, that there's a lot of money to be made because of Medicaid and other insurance that people have to put these children on the medication. It's not just the sugar alone. It is the chemical industry as well. But when a child goes to the doctor's office after having donuts and soda pop and they're off the wall or they come to school that way, that has something to do with it. I think that we need to look at nutrition and look at what we're having. 80% of Americans have a magnesium deficiency. And a lot of kids, that if they would give the child a vitamin or the magnesium supplement, it's very easy for a doctor to do a test to see if they're deficient in some of these minerals because they're not getting the proper nutrition. They're getting a lot of sugar.
And that's all I want to say. Yeah, I think that that's really important, and obviously nutrition is at the base of a lot of this. But also, first of all, the total illegitimacy of the diagnosis, that the person who created the diagnosis on his deathbed, that this was a fraudulent...
When you have the sugar, it gives them validity, because that's what happens to people that deserve...
But not really, because even when they were trying to assess what the quote-unquote symptoms of ADHD were, the experts couldn't even put that together. And so they don't really look at it. But, if you're going to talk nutrition, then you also have to talk about the education system and the horrible things that are going on with the education system, the lack of play, the ridiculous expectations of what they think that kids are supposed to be able to know and do, and the lack of young people just being able to be young people anymore, and being, you know, just marked right through and turned into a cog. But the actual diagnosis, and where you have these teachers, and Emily, I think if you can get back to this, because I think this is a really important point about these teachers who are not legally allowed to be making diagnosing, determining whether or not a kid can sit in their room without being on a drug. And how that is affecting tens of thousands of children who are then growing up.
Go ahead.
No, Emily, please. That's what I'm...
Well, it's not just that. It's also that these kids are going to school. They're living in poverty. They're going to school very hungry. They're not being fed properly. And their behaviors are also in a reaction to that. And the teachers, like you said, are diagnosing these kids based off of those behaviors. If a kid isn't being fed properly, of course you're going to see these reactions. And again, it goes back to, you know, the way I was taught, the person and environment. You have to look at a child as a whole person and look at them in their environment and see what's going on with them. And, you know, people need to be educated. The public needs to be educated on all of this.
Right, and they're
they're not. These doctors are telling them, well, take this pill. This will help you. And no, it's not going to help your child. That's not the answer. A pill is not the answer. You know, I'm always reminded of this police officer that I know. And they told him his daughter was diagnosed with ADHD. And his daughter is definitely hyperactive. But whether or not she's ADHD or not is not the issue. He trained his daughter every morning, exercise, you know, whatever it may be, to deal with her problems. You don't need a pill. A pill is not the answer.
You deal with
life circumstances on life's terms.
And then you're teaching young people that when they have a problem that they should take a pill. And
exactly.
So we're creating the market for the next 80 years by putting these kids where you have 0 to 3-year-olds on psychotropic drugs, 3-year-olds on Haldol. Like what do no harm? What part of do no harm fits with give a 3-year-old Haldol? Like it's not like a rare incident here or there. And if you're in the foster care system, or that your parents you've been taken away from your parents for whatever reason, you are at like monstrous risk over somebody who is not in the foster care system. Like 90-some-odd% of the children in foster care are on psychiatric drugs, and so we're just not giving any attention to the person in the environment. And Emily, I thank you for bringing that statement out because it's a really important one. We are not fixing our society here, looking at the social structures that people have to operate in. We're just placing more and more bars down. And that's what Murphy does. And it's what Barbara does. I mean, Barbara even more than Murphy, because Barbara goes after all of the early intervention and prevention and screening stuff, you know? Like, that's what the whole Barbara bill is about, you know, targeting young people.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I didn't read... Someone actually reminded me to read the Barbara bill over, and I actually need to read that a little more closely because I didn't see that, and I didn't know about the veterans, about those courts, because I am all for the veterans, and... you know, the one thing that upsets me with Murphy is that these veterans go to war and they come back traumatized and they want to violate these veterans' Second Amendment rights. And PTSD, you know, the brain gets traumatized. If you see something long enough, your brain is going to get traumatized. But through whatever treatment or therapy, it goes away. It does. It goes away. you don't take away someone's rights because of that.
Right.
You don't do that.
And
you don't
then,
violate
I mean,
their rights.
No, you don't. But what they're doing is they're not only drugging and electroshocking veterans beyond all kinds of disrepair, but there's also like this DARPA initiative, a $70 million initiative of where the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency of the military is going to be implanting devices into the brains of veterans who are experiencing post-traumatic stress or other psychiatric things to try to rewire the chemical impulses of their brain through this implant. And this is what they're doing.
Is that magnetic thing?
I'm sorry?
Is that magnetic thing that I saw?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think that this is magnetic. I think that it's not the smart pill. It's an actual implant in the brain that they would control electrical impulses and that they would monitor electrical impulses. And the story, it sounds like science fiction, right? It sounds like Lauren, you know, do something because you're out of your mind. But the story ran on NPR, and it's called, ran May 27th, 2014, and it's called Military Plans to Test Brain Implants to Fight Mental Disorders. And the author was John Hamilton, and I'll send you a link to it on the protest page, and I just also sent a link to the... To the Murphy Bill. But you know, this is what we're doing to veterans. We're putting implants in, and it's not science fiction; it's real. And this is so if the government is willing to do this to the veterans who have put their lives on their line for us, fighting and their families and all of the support that they needed in order to do that, then what are they willing to do for the average citizen who hasn't done anything for their country in terms of going to fight or something like that, you know, like service. So when Murphy starts talking about courts specifically for veterans that are going to deal with criminal mental health and substance use all in the same spot and that there's going to be intensive things, and at the same time the military is, you know, implanting electronic devices into veterans' heads, like, I don't know, and this is just one little tiny slice. That's why, like, if you read over the entire Murphy Bill, it's like the mass amount of changes of things that it will wind up affecting are just really, really expansive. It entirely changes, like, the way that drugs are paid for through Medicare and Medicaid, and all we hear about is that, oh, they're going to cut SAMHSA. Oh, no, they're going to cut the Alternatives Conference. They're not cutting. You know what I mean? Like, that's the least of what these people are trying to do in this bill.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on, something needs to be done, and I think a big start is getting the public involved and educating them, and you know, letting them know that this is not just affecting people who have been diagnosed with mental illness. This is affecting your children. Like, it's in the classroom, you know. And I go back to, you know, look at that child that was twirling his pencil.
Right.
He was subjected to a five-hour mental exam. And his father, who wanted no part of it, had CPS called on him. This is gonna continue. And it's going to get worse. If the public isn't informed and we don't step up to the plate and we don't do something. But there has to be some sort of consensus between all groups, and we all need to come together and understand that we may not, and again, you may not agree with me on this, we may not agree on a common language, but we all agree that it's civil rights violations and that we want to ultimately one day get rid of forced treatment.
Right, and I agree with you. It is civil rights violations. It's constitutional rights violations, but it's also
yeah.
human rights violations.
Yeah.
And Article 4 is no slavery, and Article 5 is no torture. And these are human rights declarations, the Declaration of Human Rights that are also, so it is civil rights, it is constitutional rights, but it is also human rights. And that is where, another level where some of these other larger issues get addressed that aren't necessarily, because under constitutional rights, slavery, for example, if you're in prison, you're allowed to be a slave.
And I think that's, and not to cut you off, but I think that's where we all need to work together, because if, you know, myself and Jeannie are working from the civil rights protection, okay, then maybe yourself and Tina can come in and work from the human rights perspective. But we all need to understand that, okay, maybe we're not going to agree on a common language, but we are going to agree that we're working for the same cause. We are, you know what I mean?
I think you and I may mostly be working for the same cause, but not everybody in this movement is working for the same cause, Emily, and that's the sad reality of it. And that's one of the reasons why people can't all come underneath the same banner.
It is sad, but for God.
Well, no, just because not everybody is working for the same thing, and there are people who will call themselves advocates who are not advocating for the rights of people, but who are advocating for programming that will ultimately destroy their rights. And I think that that's a big distinction, and it's been a constant issue, and it's why we always lose, because those are the people who wind up being in positions of power.
And believe me, we are looking out for those people. We are. We are on...
I know it, and I'm excited to be involved. I'm on the social media work group thing part of it, and I think that, you know, that it's a great effort to try to bring people together where you can on these civil rights issues, and there are plenty of them just on civil rights issues. But, you know, that you have through that the support of the human rights and the constitutional rights. Also, but that you know, and people can find the Mental Health Civil Rights Protest page on Facebook in the search bar, Mental Health Civil Rights Protest. Do you want to give out the hashtags and the Twitter handle and stuff like that?
The Twitter handle is Mental Health Act, and the hashtag is One Voice, and We Have a Voice.
Okay. Okay, great.
I just want to say one thing. As an old protester, as a child, I was always taught human rights first, then civil rights. But because if you don't have human rights, you can't really much do anything about civil rights. People have a right to exist and to their choices about life above everything else. I think that's what we're fighting for, even if people make bad choices that other people make choices that other people feel are bad, it's still their right to do so.
That's right. As Lester says, fail with the grace of dignity. And have the risk to fail, being able to take the risk to fail. And so I think the human rights issues are essential to the entire conversation. And Yvonne, I thank you for bringing that in like that, because, I really, if we work out of a human rights framework, then all of these other things have to fall into place in it, because they meet the human rights. But if we're not seen as people who are deserving of human rights by the legislature, by the, you know, because certainly psychiatry doesn't see us as people.
It's already there because if that wasn't the case, people wouldn't be talking about adults as if they were children. You wouldn't have parents going before the U.S. Congress talking about grown people as if they were children. And I think that that's where probably is a good point when people are educating people to talk in terms of whether there's evidence about whether there's a real disorder or not, whether there is, and the role that trauma has to play in it. And I just think that whether you believe in either theory about this, I just think it's bad when large organizations that say they're family organizations, when I think about family, I always think about, you know, a child or a mother or father speaking for someone, you know, 9, 10, under the age of 16 years of age. But, you know, when do you get, when are you have an adult relationship? Why is it that because of somebody's blood ties to you that you're 25, 30, 40 years old and, you know, why are people listening to people talking about grown people? And, you know, that's something
the privacy rights that Murphy's bill will institute in just violating people's ability, you know, and why do parents get to have the right or family members information about somebody? And then the idea that they're using this loophole around dangerousness in order to say that, no, that's what they're going to do now. They're just going to tell everybody that, you were dangerous, so I had to tell. And so the danger and the subjectiveness of what's danger and what's threat now becomes even more deeper, and that they're involved. They're cooperating with the oppression of our people. That is what's happening, and they're giving them
and
ideas.
And they're setting themselves for Supreme Court. They're going to be, you know, I hope that this won't come to effect, but there will be lots of court challenges if that came forth because, like I said, grown people, and this is why people have to pay attention to. They may not like the words that people use, but what you're talking about is it is kind of a racketeering type of system of taking over people's lives. I think of it more about like how East Germany was doing the Cold War. You know, people need to really, if they don't know history, they need to go back because you're going to have teachers reporting on people. You're going to have police officers because in some of these mental health court cases, you know, it's the word of your beat cop. If you live in a small town or county, your sheriff has a lot of power. And just think
your college professor is expected to turn you in. This is wide reaching. I mean, as it stands right now, because of all of these, you know, mass murders on college campuses and everything, college professors all over the country are routinely instructed in how to turn people in. It's part of their risk management system that we have to go through trainings where they identify who are quote-unquote red flags and who professors should be turning in. There is nobody who is exempt from this anymore. There is absolutely not one group of people who can get away without getting this kind of introspection.
People that don't think they're in school, don't think that they have run-ins with the law, they should think about the employers. If you're in a work situation and you might be at, you might have a reduction in force where you are, you know, just the specter of all this, this is why I think they've over-magnified this and where their real risk of danger is going to be overshadowed because people will just be looking at each and everything. So if you work, like I said, you don't have, you think, oh, I don't have involvement with the police. You live in a small town, you live in a county where the sheriff has a lot of power. You work in an employment situation, it'd be right for employers or coworkers, competitors where you're competing for positions and stuff. There's a lot of rightness for abuse. I mean, that's what they had in East Germany during the Cold War. So the one out of every three East Germans was spying on each other. And that's what you're going to have, is that kind of situation here if you have these laws. You know, people don't think about it. People went to gulags in Russia. A lot of the places they went to, they went to asylums.
Yeah.
And if you don't know your history, sometimes you're bound to.
You should go read it, yeah.
People should go and see what happens, because they use, in a lot of other countries too, that they use psychiatry as a way of controlling people. And it just hasn't happened here. I think another way of attack is to, without calling names, is to investigate and look at the people who they constantly, the media constantly quote. A lot of times what happens is you hear words said by the TV press, by the print press. And the words, you say, my God, they just took a line out of such and such's website. But you have to be able to stop these people in the tracks. I mean, I'm tired of Ethel Torrey being quoted as an expert on mental illness.
It's a fraud. It's defrauding the public. The Treatment Advocacy Center is defrauding the public. They are putting out a message that this is a brain disease with not a shred of physical medical evidence anywhere about it. It is criminal, and Tori should be held criminally accountable for this, and
you should be looking at what the Stanley, how much money he's getting from the Stanley Research Foundation. Because you know what major universities have, just like the peer organizations, they're not exempt either. They want researchers in medical schools and universities. They want grant money for research. And you have to go back, and you can, all these things are public information. You go to the Stanley Research Institute and see who they gave money to for research. As much as we say that these things are not real illness, if somebody's giving you money for something, you know, we've seen this a lot of times. I don't know, Lauren did come in contact with this, or the other lady, wherein people are looking for money for the organization, and they apply for a grant for something that may not have very little to do with what they do, maybe thinly, but they apply for it anyway. And so, you know, their Stanley Research and the pharmaceutical companies, they're the ones who give money for research. You know, it's the thing about the research for the Food and Drug Administration. There's the FDA is a very small organization. They outsource a lot of stuff. You have to look at who are they outsourcing. If you're looking at ECT or other drugs, you can look up see who they're outsourcing stuff. There's only a few companies involved. So there's lots of homework for people to do on this. So just like the other lady was saying, is you bring information to people who can do something about it, but you have to do your homework. And sometimes that's not very glamorous. That's very tedious work for people to do to do this. You know, I think in terms of the tobacco industry, I remember when 60 Minutes used to do good reporting, like when they did on the tobacco industry. We have to do the same thing. We have to look into people's motivation. You know, people are smart enough now, they don't get quid pro for anything. A family member or someone else may get a salary from an organization, or even, it may not be for organization. You'll see that maybe National Rifle Association is giving a congressman. Why is the person pushing so hard on mental health, saying it's a solution to some of these massacres? You may find that they're getting hundreds of thousands or yet millions of dollars from head people at NRA. So you got to look into all that stuff and try to expose it.
I think trying to expose it is definitely where we need to go, and continued reminders of what our just whatever history is, and not only the history of the these movements, but also the history of the larger history that we're all operating in. And Emily, I want to thank you for calling in tonight. And again, people can get involved with the Mental Health Civil Rights Protest on Facebook and Mental Health Act on Twitter. One voice, and we have a voice, or some of the hashtags. I want to remind people that I will be in Missouri, St. Joseph's Gloria Psychiatric Museum on July 3rd. And in the next coming weeks, we're going to be coming up with a schedule for shows, and we have some specials coming up, including one on judicial accountability and the jury trial on July 9th. And I would just want to also again remind people that if you have a tip or an idea for a show or would like to be a guest, that you can call me at area code 718-273-8708. That's area code 718-273-8708. Then we'll talk. Iman, David, Emily, thank you all for calling in. Thank you for all who were listening tonight. And I'm going to ask you to keep on speaking out. And until I talk to you next time, talk to you soon.